Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
This is another podcast of Walk Worldwide, the international LGBT news and current affairs show. Every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the World Wide Wave.
Hello, Australia. It's Worldwide Wave time. Joy's international news and current affairs show coming to you from Melbourne. Tonight, it's just Damien and myself in the studio. G'day, Damien.
It's just us, Matt. Hello.
Well, the country that we have become today is one with many freedoms and opportunities, including that to critique those in power, such as in government. It's not so in many other countries. Tonight, we take you inside Vladimir Putin's Russia, but through the eyes of an 18th century playwright.
What is the link between an iconic playwright and today's gay community in Russia?
How do you turn an iconic 1895 play into a modern day one?
If he was alive today, what would Anton Chekhov think of his play being adapted with gay themes?
For an artistic look at Russia and its anti-gay laws, joining us in the studio tonight is Chaney Caddy, the artistic director of Black Apple Theatre, who have a show based on Chekhov's The Seagull in this year's Midsummer Festival.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
Kicking off with some good news out of Africa tonight, where former Botswana president has spoken up in support of LGBT rights. Fetus Mogai has expressed his support for the LGBT rights movement in Africa. He said, "While I admit the West often push their agendas on Africa, which we must be wary of, I also believe that we must, as Africans, admit that the world is changing. This means often abandoning some of our long-held convictions about life." He spoke up defending LGBT rights advocates in Botswana who are continuing their campaign to decriminalise consensual same-sex relations. So currently the penalty is up to 14 years for consensual same-sex relations. He also specifically spoke about Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe and his anti-gay rhetoric, including where he compared gay people to worse than dogs and pigs. He said, "President Mugabe has said that he hates homosexuals and on record as saying they are worse than pigs and dogs. That's still his position. Leadership is not always about you," he added. "It's about the people and often circumstances. I call upon African leaders to open up second generation rights." This is actually really quite significant for him to be speaking out so vocally.
In Botswana.
In Botswana, where same-sex relations are still criminalised. He's actually, there's been quite a few former African heads of government who have spoken up for LGBT rights. In Mozambique, the president there has spoken up, and they've actually since changed their laws and decriminalised homosexuality, which everybody thought was going to be, you know,
impossible
to happen. There's also been the former Zambian First Lady, Christine Kasiba Sata, who, even though her husband was fairly silent on LGBT rights, she was out there speaking for it, which was, again, quite progressive. And then, of course, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who has been an advocate over many years, and indeed his daughter got married to her same-sex partner.
That's good news. I do wonder where this wave of sanity is coming from.
Let's hope it continues.
Absolutely. Over to Portugal, where the president has blocked laws on gay adoption. President Silva says the legislation granting gay couples the same adoption rights as heterosexuals is a radical change that requires broader public consultation. He says Parliament has failed to demonstrate it is in the best interest of children. Sorry, I laugh because it's always about the children.
It's always about the children. And one of the changes they also want to bring in, so they've sort of linked abortion in the same bill as these same-sex rights as well.
Yeah, it's all the stuff that we're not going to change.
And that's one of the things he wants to make sure. Well, one of the things he doesn't want to bring in is mandatory counselling for, or doesn't want to remove, I should say, mandatory counselling for women seeking an abortion. So basically, the Parliament has decided that women should have the right, and he's saying no, he wants to keep that mandatory. So there is still a chance that the Parliament can overrule him. If they can get the numbers for 2/3 to back the bill, then the government can in fact overrule him. So we'll watch that one coming
this space.
Out of Portugal. Malawi now, where the United Nations has lodged a formal protest over one of the political parties, their spokesman, Kenneth Musonda, who's from the former ruling People's Party, made statements calling on gays and lesbians to be killed and describing them as worse than dogs. Must be a relative of Mr. Mugabe. He was speaking out saying, arresting them, being gay people, won't address the problem because sooner or later they'll be released on bail. The best way to deal with this problem is to kill them. And he's repeated this. So it started on the internet and then he's repeated it publicly in the media, forcing. The United Nations have then spoken out and formally asked the government to cease this practice. And there are currently two civil organisations who have lodged complaints, criminal cases against Mr. Musonda for inciting people to break the law. So far, the Director of Public Prosecutions there in Malawi has refused to hear the case.
It's beyond belief that we've just heard that. And
it's Africa. It shouldn't be beyond belief.
Well, yeah, but we just heard from Botswana, so
it's different ends of the spectrum, isn't it?
You know, absolutely. So in so many ways, we see there's so much hope coming out of Africa, and then you hear stories such as this one, which just makes you wonder, you know, like, we've got a long way to go.
Across to the Philippines now, where Miss Universe, Pia Warsbuck, this is the one that got awarded the second chance.
By accident.
She was the right one. The other one got awarded and then had it taken off. Very embarrassing. In any case, Miss Universe has said that she herself would be tested for HIV to show the world and the universe that this is the first step to addressing the HIV crisis. She made the comments both in a part of the competition itself, but then also later in the media. The first step is to get yourself tested, she says, and to let yourself be informed. I have plans to getting tested myself. So she hasn't been tested yet, but this is actually fairly significant because the university-type activities, these pageants, have this enormous following in Southeast Asia, Philippines, Thailand, all around there. Enormous television ratings.
It's a fantastic platform.
Exactly. So for her to be speaking up, this just might in fact be encouraging some people to take notice.
Over to Italy, where Italy remains divided over an effort to legalise civil unions for gays.
And in Austria, an educational leaflet has been created to teach refugees from homophobic countries that gay people must be respected.
In Germany, Berlin Gay Rights Group is set to open a centre for over 100 LGBT asylum seekers.
And the International Olympic Committee has received a new recommendation for guidelines on trans athletes that will open the door for more trans athletes to compete internationally. And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
It's Romana Schlesinger from the Rainbow Pride Bratislava in Slovakia for Worldwide Wave.
Tonight we're looking at Russia. Just a message through on Facebook from Peter. We had a story there with the South Australian Premier during the week saying that he would apologise to the family of the British man after he was refused to have his partner's name put on the death certificate. Pete says, yes, and Tim Wilson should make a public statement on this as well, which we did actually find a statement, and Pete has said perhaps we could get him onto the show. So we're going to see if we can, in fact, do that. Tonight we are off to Russia and looking at Russia through the eyes of theatre, and in particular a play from the late 1890s. Joining us in the studio now, Chaney Caddy from Black Apple Theatre. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Matt.
Now, tell us about the original story, Chekhov's story of The Seagull.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know Chekhov, he's like Russian Shakespeare. He's probably the most famous Russian playwright, and he writes stories about people who feel trapped in their own lives. Quite often there's a sense that they are going to get out and rescue themselves, but often there's sort of huge kind of impediments in their way. And The Seagull is one of those plays. It's full of people who are thrown together in a in the original version, they're thrown together in a country estate. And they're all related, and it's very claustrophobic, and they're all either in love with each other or they hate each other.
So sounds like an 1890s soap opera.
Yeah, it is exactly. It's like 1890s Neighbours, basically. It's about being in love with the wrong person and having aspirations that are unfulfilled.
So how have you... Now, you've modernised that and you've, if you like, given it a gay flavour. How did you do that?
Well, it's a little bit more than a gay flavour. I think the gay themes run the whole way through, because I was looking at if we were to restage Chekhov in a way that made, I guess, the confining and binding and repressive forces in the original play resonate with a modern audience, what that would look like. Because at lots of stagings I've seen of The Seagull... has the characters sort of look like they're not taking any action, because we don't understand the things that prevented people from living their lives in the 1890s, like class and gender and money and geography were understood differently in those days. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't just, you know, leave your husband and get a new job and move to the city, and
there are a lot more,
you know, you couldn't start a blog and talk about your feelings.
For numerous reasons.
But so I was looking at a way to kind of make the text live again. And it just sort of, I saw a Stephen Fry documentary about Russia, and it sort of fell into place that one thing that would really keep you in stasis, would stop you in your tracks in Russia today, would be being gay. So I took one of the central characters, Kostya, who's in she's in the original play, she's a young man who's madly in love with another character called Nina, and she's part of this, of a love triangle with another character called Masha, who loves Kostya, but Kostya dislikes Masha and loves Nina, who loves someone else.
Oh my gosh, can you draw a map for us?
It's crazy. But we made Kostya a woman, so now it becomes a story of an 18-year-old girl who's in love with another woman. And then it makes Masha's character also a queer character, because she's in this grip of this terrible unrequited love that she can't speak about for Kostya.
Chaney, did the original explore sexuality at all in any way?
In the way that they could in the 1890s. So it talks about sexuality as love. So there's lots of lust and longing, and people often reach out to people who are incapable or unwilling to love them, which I feel we've changed very little of the original text, and just by changing the gender of a performer, it reads really strongly as a queer coming out narrative.
Right. So the themes are so universal and so, I guess, you know, old as the day that you haven't had to modernise per se. Just by doing a simple change like that, it's still true to the human experience.
Yeah, it's. I think that the reason why Chekhov is so enduring is because the humanity of his writing transcends the time. And if you can find a way to kind of strip away all the trappings of a period drama, which can be a barrier for the audience, then what you get is the humanity. And these people are just so human in their cruelty and their hope and their love and their humour and their wit. And, you know, the everyday cruelties they perpetuate on each other. And that's not a straight narrative or a queer narrative. It's a human narrative.
There's probably been more stories coming out of Russia with the anti-gay laws to do with gay men and violence and things towards gay men under these anti-gay laws. But you've chosen women to theme this around. Was there a particular reason behind that?
I think that gay women are suffering just as much under these laws. It's just that, well, I think anyone who is visibly, visibly different in Russia is a target, whether you're male or female. But I think that I feel more qualified to speak as a lesbian from a female perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also important as part of Midsummer, because quite often the dominant narrative, even in Melbourne, in Australia, where we have so much privilege, is often high camp male narratives.
And white Anglo-Saxon male even.
Yeah, then that's because I think that that's a narrative that more traditional parts of the community feel comfortable with, but lesbians are interesting too.
Well said.
Yeah.
Message in. Thanks, Tristan. I'm loving the show, enjoying listening to you with a glass of wine. We are exceedingly jealous. It's Worldwide Wave, and we've got more about Russia and the play The Seagull in Midsummer coming right up.
Hello and goedenavond. This is Elko, listening in from the Netherlands on Worldwide Wave, the latest LGBT news and current affairs on joy.org.au.
Message in. Paul from Arabin, thanks for your message. Great show. Check out Reggie Yates' Extreme Russia, a documentary covering gay life in Russia. And yes, lesbians equally targets of hate crimes in Russia. Thank you, Paul. Peter on Facebook, comment from the story from last week on the new Taiwanese president who supports same-sex marriage says, what a smart and cool president.
Yeah, where's ours?
Now, tonight we are back in Russia, and in the studio with us is Chaney Caddy, the artistic director of Black Apple Theatre, whose show The Seagull is on at Northcote Town Hall starting next week. We were talking before about, you said yourself that there's so many adaptations of this play. It's obviously very universal. The actors are actually speaking the original lines from the play, aren't they? But you've themed it into the modern sense.
Well, they're speaking an English translation because the original is in Russian.
Well, that's good. That's much better.
But yeah, we thought that would be more accessible. We've made a few cuts, so it's shorter than the original because no one wants to see a 3-hour-long play.
Yeah.
But mostly we've just changed gender pronouns, and we've taken out references to horses and country estates.
Have you got something against horses?
Yeah, there's not many in Russian, like Soviet-era housing estates in regional centres in Russia. Like, they're thin on the ground. So we took the horses out.
That's a pretty,
I'm sorry.
Pretty easy edit. Get rid of the horses, change the pronouns, and we're done.
Yeah, but it's... there's so many scenes that are so suited to being queer narratives. Scenes where, like, the younger characters will go to an older character and sort of confess their, passionate love for a character that is now of the same sex, and the older characters sort of refuse to deal with that that story. And so it reads like a coming out narrative.
Is it would you describe it as a romance, a comedy, a drama?
It's a bit of everything. There's definitely bits which are full of conflict and sadness, but there's lots of funny bits. Chekhov described it as a comedy. I think he had a funny sense of humour. But
a black comedy.
There's definitely really funny bits to the play. Like, it's not a drag. It's not going to be something terribly worthy that you have to drag yourself along to see to feel better.
So it's about Russia, but it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's edgy. We'll say it's edgy.
Edgy.
We've got...
Perfect for Melbourne, actually.
Yeah, we've set it in an urban environment, and the characters, like the three angry teenagers, are all sort of running around the back streets, running amok, spray painting on walls and the set, and... we've got a band in the background with an accordion and a cello, and
And you've actually written music. You've written a score for this.
Yeah, we've got a fantastic composer called Jess Keefe, and she's written, it's very cinematic. She's written a live score to go with the play. So all of a sudden the band will strike up and you get this fantastic music, which she actually based on a genre of music from the criminal underworld of Russia. So it's great fun. And some of it's from the opening part of the play. I said to her, I want a feeling like all the pieces are falling into place. And she took the theme from Tetris and turned it into like this Russian ballad. She's really clever.
Sounds like a wonderful play on just so many levels. I mean, you're really selling it. You know, it's really intelligent. It's funny. It cuts across a whole bunch of different genres. It's timely, even though it's timeless. I don't know, Matt. We should go get some tickets.
I think so. We definitely will. Being such a revered Russian playwright, and given that the laws are anti-gay laws, does that make it all the more powerful? It's almost a slap in the face to the laws.
It's, I think, taking a Russian classic and making it queer is, I hope it's a kick in the pants for the powers that be, because they've really excluded LGBTI people from from having any kind of freedom
having
of speech in
mm.
Russia. Like, they've excluded them from the cultural narrative, and how dare they? Like, how dare they do that to a whole group of people? Like, because if you have no voice, then you don't exist.
That's
have
what
no
they're saying,
protection.
Isn't it? They're saying you don't exist.
They're not saying it's not illegal to be gay in Russia. It's just illegal to talk about being gay. So it equates to the same thing.
Mm.
And if you can't talk about being gay, then you can't enjoy the protection of the law, because, for example, there's no law in Russia that prevents hate crimes on the basis of perceived or real gender or sexual identity. So that's in their Hate Crimes Act. Gay people aren't protected, and you can't stand up in court and say, I was bashed because I was gay.
Why did they bother with the act then?
Well, because even though it wasn't recognised in the hate crimes legislation, you could still, until this law was enacted, you could still protest, you could still make art about being gay, you could still provide information to young people, you know, all that kind of thing. So you had a voice, and through that voice, had this law not been enacted, I would have presumed that people in Russia would have eventually done something about their hate crimes legislation. So
now, what people who have seen who will see your show, what emotion do you hope that they will take away with them? What do you think they will walk out of that theatre with?
Oh, not just one
emotions.
I hope they enjoy themselves, and then I hope they have a conversation with people. I think that taking people on a journey is a much better way of getting them to connect with ideas than providing them with information or lecturing them or harrying them. There'll be a few people that come to see it that really are very passionate about Chekhov that will hate what we've done with it.
A different interpretation?
Yeah,
there'll
be people who never seen Chekhov that really love it.
So you sold a few tickets to Mr. Vlad Putin, have you?
Yeah, he's coming on opening night.
Excellent.
Come down with your placards.
Yeah.
tell us a bit.
We've stayed a seat next to the stage manager for him.
Tell us a bit about Black Apple Theatre, the group that's putting this on, because, I mean, this sounds like a huge undertaking.
It's epic. I don't know what I was thinking. So we're an independent theatre company. We've been going since 2007. We say we work with young and emerging artists. That's because we are young and emerging artists, although I'm rapidly becoming less young.
Aren't we all?
But we make work that we care deeply about, because no one's getting paid. So we're self-funded. We don't have state funding. We don't often apply for grants. So it comes out of the company coffers.
And indeed the ticket sales.
Yeah, and the ticket sales, so please come to our show. But everyone involved, and we have a massive team on this. We've got 8 people in the cast. We have lighting, set, costume designers, an animator, a composer, director, assistant director, hairdresser.
Just quickly tell us about the animator. I mean, that's, again,
so
that's
a fantastic animator called Christy Widiato, and she does... some of what she does we describe as cultural animation. So she's done a fantastic project in Footscray, which was a stop-motion animation that they painted on a wall. So she did this massive mural and then animated it, frame by frame, that was the history of Footscray. So I've worked with her in the past, and she's come on board for this to create, I guess, some of the layering around this play and help us create... kind of the psychological drama of the piece.
From Footscray to Russia.
Yeah.
The show is The Seagull. It's Chekhov's masterpiece, Putin's Russia. It's a midsummer event. Get out there and enjoy it. I've been speaking with Chaney Caddy, the Artistic Director for Black Apple Theatre. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Now, we've been talking Russia tonight and, I guess, critiquing the anti-gay laws that are on in Russia. We thought maybe we'd hear from the horse's mouth, so to speak, what Vladimir Putin thinks about his own laws, the anti-gay propaganda laws in Russia. This is Putin speaking with BBC News.
You know, I can't answer the part of your question about whether homosexuals are born or made. That is beyond my professional interest. I'm just not qualified to respond. I would like to draw your attention to the fact that in Russia, unlike in one-third of world's countries, being gay is not a crime. In 70 countries, there is criminal liability for homosexuality, and in 7 of those countries, they have the death penalty for homosexuality. We have recently passed a law prohibiting propaganda, and not of homosexuality only, but of homosexuality and child abuse, child sexual abuse. But this is nothing to do with persecuting individuals for their sexual orientation. There is a world of difference between these two things. So there is no danger for individuals of this non-traditional sexual orientation who are planning to come to the Games as visitors or participants.
What about the Russian church people who have called for the return of criminal law against homosexual people? Do you support that? Are you horrified by it? What's your attitude?
In law, the church is separate from the state and has the right to its own point of view. I would also like to point out that almost all traditional world religions agree on this topic. Is the position of the Holy See different from that of the Russian Orthodox Church? Does Islam treat individuals with non-traditional sexual orientation differently? Actually, it's even tougher. Read our law carefully and pay attention to its name. It's called a ban on the propaganda of pedophilia and homosexuality. It seems to me that the law we adopted doesn't harm anybody. What's more, people, homosexual people, can't feel inferior here because there is no professional, career or social discrimination against them. When they achieve great success, for example, Elton John is an extraordinary person, a distinguished musician, and millions of our people sincerely love him, regardless of his sexual orientation.
Ah, yes, pulling out the Elton John card. It's like people that say, I'm not homophobic. I've got friends who are gay. Not that I would say that they're friends, but I guess it's it highlights the intense difference. There are obviously reports of quite violent incidents occurring, homophobic violence in Russia, and he's sitting there saying there's no social discrimination, it doesn't harm anyone.
Yeah, I don't think the interview was kind of long enough to actually say, well, please elaborate on how your current policy is not harming anybody.
And then you've got the other argument of, well, other countries are worse. Well, hopefully that's not aspiring to be the bottom of the bottom
it's
of
the race to the bottom.
Yeah, that was, of course, recorded just before the Sochi Olympics, so hence the reference to the Olympics. Interestingly, since those Olympics, the volume of reports about LGBTI people in Russia has significantly decreased. So hopefully it is not gone and not forgotten, certainly not by us here at Joy 94.9. We're talking Russia here tonight on World Wide Wave.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
Hi, this is Janne, Mr. Gay Finland, and you are listening on the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
Couple of messages coming in. Let's hope we all appreciate how lucky and prosperous we are to live in a country that accepts diversity and is moving towards recognising marriage equality. And another one, very disappointed, Mr. Abbott is visiting a controversial lobby group in the US that instigates hate. He should be chastised by his colleagues. We'll see if that happens. Big thank you to our guest tonight. Fascinating show. Chaney Caddy, the artistic director of Black Apple Theatre. It's a midsummer event at Northcote Town Hall from the 2nd to the 7th.
Also, thank you to everyone that has interacted with us on Facebook over the past week. That's Scott, Brian, Kate, Malcolm, Tao, Kurt, plus a heap more. That's W3 Joy on Facebook.
Next week, Queens Under the Queen. We're looking at gays in the Commonwealth. Taking us out, some Russian music.
It's He by Cerebro.
We'll catch you next week on World Wide Wave.
Thanks for listening to another podcast of the World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australia time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne or online at joy.org.au. You'll find all of our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave. Or follow us on Facebook for latest international LGBT news. Search W3 Joy on Facebook now.
Connecting, representing, celebrating. Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.